What is the role of state government in economic development? You're listening to SDPP's In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Commissioner Bill Even leads the Governor's Office of Economic Development in South Dakota. Throughout the year, he is behind the wheel, visiting business owners and would-be business owners in all corners of the state. During the legislative session, he's often in Pierre, talking with lawmakers. He made time to stop by the Kirby Family Studio in our SDPB studios in Sioux Falls. Let's start here with what lawmakers want to know from the state's top economic development official.
So first off, things might be related to a particular topic, right? So there's a bill on topic X, and if it's relevant to our office, then we often interact with legislators on that. And often, frankly, Lori, you know, we've got a lot of legislators. This is only their second year in the legislature. And there's a lot that you have to stay on top of as a legislator. When you think about all of the issues that face the governor, also all of them face the legislature. And so we spend a lot of our time just explaining things, right? Providing facts, providing data, providing information, explaining how processes work so that they can understand, if I want to do some legislation, here's how the system works, or here's some proof points.
Help us understand the role of the state of South Dakota in economic development. What is your role and what is not your role? Because that's coming up a lot in debate in the state legislature this year, is what the state should be doing or what's really up to the free market.
Yeah, so the Governor's Office of Economic Development's been around now for 38 years, started by Governor Mickelson in 1987. And it's really designed to be there as a resource for businesses in state or out of state and communities in the state who have people that want to fulfill their visions and their dreams. And so they would come to us and say, let's say you're in Kimball and you're running a small welding shop and you have the opportunity to expand. You would come to us and say, do you have any assistance you can give us on business planning? I've got my bank on board now. What sort of incentives does the state of South Dakota have if I want to expand my business here in Kimball? Mm-hmm. And so we do a lot of, I would characterize it as reactive to what people in the state of South Dakota are already wanting to do. Now, we also do some proactive work, and that is often in the areas of our target industries. And these are industries that South Dakota already would have a competitive advantage or kind of fits us in our culture. Mm-hmm. And so we have visibility nationwide and sometimes internationally that, hey, if you're looking for a state that's got a great work ethic, that's got a lot of accessibility of its leadership from the governor on down, that you're going to be in a low tax environment. And as the governor would say, you know, we cut red tape, but we don't cut corners, meaning we're going to follow the law environmentally or otherwise. Mm. You should come consider South Dakota, because your experience here as a business owner is going to be quite a bit different than if you were in a state like Illinois, Minnesota, New York, California, Colorado. It just is. And for certain businesses, that's very appealing to them. And I'll also say, when you've got the governor's pheasant hunt, you've got the Buffalo Roundup, we have our economic development conference coming up here in late February. There's opportunities for people to see and experience South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And what we really enjoy, that's also what businesses also find valuable as well.
I understand the tax benefit. Work ethic, though, it seems like every state probably says they have a good work ethic. What do you mean? What kind of businesses can you attract that match what you would consider a South Dakota work ethic?
Well, probably two data points. So the unemployment rate in South Dakota, I think, is 2.2% right now, which is the lowest in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got the fourth highest workforce participation rate of any state in the country. Okay. So when you look at those two things together, that tells you something. Number one, that everybody in South Dakota that has a job or wants a job, you know, has the job. And number two, people in South Dakota are ready, willing, and able to work. And when you look at the larger data sets, you can see that our state income is now above the national average as well. And so often, you know, people, you know, legitimately may be concerned, are the jobs that we have, are they lower wage or not? And I think when you look at the broader data, we work hard, And we're pulling above our weight for productivity now and above the national average on from an income standpoint.
Is that adjusted for cost of living, that income data point?
No. Okay. That would be standardized across there.
Okay. Do you have legislative priorities this session? Do you have bills that you're trying to push through, bills that you're responding to?
For our bills, the only bill we have is federal appropriation of funding to finish the broadband infrastructure build out in western South Dakota. So that's the only bill we have. It's just some federal expenditure authority that we'll need to the money that the federal government's granted to us to get that pushed through. Regarding other legislation, there's no shortage of legislation. I think there was probably over 400 some bills last week. This week, that number will punch probably well over 500. I didn't look at the count here this Monday morning. And so inside of that, you've got bills related to the Future Fund. We've got bills related to data centers, bills related to tax increment financing and the districts and things of that nature. So there's never a shortage of things that are coming across from legislators and or their constituents.
What's the data center conversation? How do you sum that up right now to somebody? You know, you're in another state, let's say, and you're explaining, and they say, what's happening in South Dakota with data centers? When you respond?
So I'd say there's kind of two camps right now. So you have one side that has looked at the data center issue and looked at the investment in both the construction jobs and the long-term jobs and the property taxes that will flow out of that. And they look at how South Dakota compares to neighboring states, meaning that many of the other states in the United States have a tax exemption for the servers that need to get changed out roughly every 3+ years. Much like you change your cell phone, your smartphone out and get a new model, they're replacing the chips and the equipment inside of the building. And these things, and for hyperscalers, turn into $1 billion spends. And so there's a bill in the legislature that is going to propose that we match what other states have for certainty around a sales tax on the equipment inside of a building. The other camp, you have folks that are looking at it and saying, you know, I've got concerns about water, I've got concerns about power, power availability and electric rates, things concerned about, you know, noise and so forth. These are all legitimate questions. I'm not saying they're not. Mm-hmm. But when you really take a look at what the facts are around data centers in the year 2026, you find that water consumption and use is negligible. It doesn't mean that you need to be prepared and make sure your community is prepared for that. That's legit. On the power side, inflation has driven up the cost of everything. Mm-hmm. And I would guess to say that regardless of where you live, and if you even have a data center, you don't have a data center in your community now, chances are your electrical rates, your utility rates have gone up anyhow. And that's due to inflation. And so I think people sometimes can kind of confuse, I would say confuse or mix up a correlation with causation on that part. I'd say, so you've got these two camps. Some saying, you know what, we should look at this as a business opportunity for the state as part of national security initiative of the United States. And it's going to be a real benefit to the state and particularly the counties they're located in. The other side is, you know what, we're really not interested in having data centers. And so you end up with those two competing forces. What I'm not seeing is the ability to get in the middle and talk to these hyperscalers and say, what other benefit can you provide to the state of South Dakota and what does that look like? So you end up with a yes if conversation instead of a no because conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that we haven't gotten to yet. And I would hope that our legislature would get into that middle ground and say, okay, I've got concerns about this. If I get those addressed, what else is it? What gets you to a yes if instead of a no because?
For people who say we shouldn't be giving them a discount because they're the wealthiest companies and they are going to print money at these places as long as they stay up and running all the time, they're going to make billions. Why are we giving them a discount to get them to competitively come to us? That is a no because. How do you take that and turn it into a yes if?
So this is speculation on my part, right?
Yeah.
But I would say this. So if you've got a hyperscaler company, I think it's also important to note that, you know, SDN Communications and others, there's data centers in South Dakota.
Right.
You're using them to get your cable TV, your internet. You've been driving by them for years. You haven't noticed them. If you're dealing with a very large company with a very large CapEx and very large cash flows, they're looking for certainty, as they say, around, I need to know over the next 30 years that every 3 to 5 years when I'm changing out my servers, I'm not going to get stuck paying essentially sales tax on that equipment that I turn over all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, you're looking for certainty. If you've got a run rate and a cash flow here, is there something else that you'd be willing to peel off and give back to the state general fund? Those conversations haven't been happening. And I think that's where this conversation needs to go, Lori, is how do you get someone to yes? What's that going to take? And instead of camping out on both sides, how do you get in the middle and say, well, what else? What are they willing to do? What else are they willing to provide in return for that certainty?
Is that your job in your office? That's not necessarily a legislator's job. Help me figure out when you're trying to get to yes that is acceptable to the people of South Dakota. Who's running point on that?
Well, politics is the art of compromise, right? Yeah. And when you really step back and think about it. And so when I think about this as a business person or a farmer, right, if you're going to go in and try to buy a tractor or buy some bred cows, you're going to start a negotiation to try to figure out, well, what are you going to get with this? What are you going to throw in? What else is, how are we going to get to a deal? And what I see, at least at this point, we haven't been many people thinking about how do you get to the deal. Our role in GOED, I think, Lori, is often sometimes just to try to serve as an honest broker into some of these conversations, provide thoughts or insight. I think that's our role because the legislators are the ones that vote, and they're the ones that are going to pass these policies. And so they have to be ready, willing, and able to talk about the trade-offs and figuring out, can they get to an agreeable point where they can shake hands on a deal?
Yeah. So let's talk about trust from your department so that legislators trust that you are that honest broker, so that citizens and voters trust that this department is doing the right thing. How do you build trust and transparency, especially in an era where some people have taken a hit in previous years?
I came to work in May of 2025, so been, you know, not quite a year here back in this role now as your commissioner for economic development. And one of the first things I did is I just went on the road, and I went from community to community to community across the state of South Dakota, from each corner, East River to West River. And over the past 9 months, have really been in a lot of communities, talked to a lot of people, talked to a lot of businesses, talked to a lot of, I would say, folks on city councils or folks in economic development. Just number one, Lori, being visible and being present and being accessible. That, okay, I know who this guy is. He's a farm kid from Humboldt, South Dakota, and he's here to listen to our concerns and provide feedback and or sometimes give us advice. Where do you think we should go? What do you think would work? And it's not just me. It's the attitude that I want to have with our whole staff. I talk about it a lot, Lori, of communicate, coordinate, collaborate with the people in the state and the businesses in the state. In my conversations with the legislature, often what they are looking for is information. And when you don't have information and data to know what's going on, you will fill that in with assumptions. And human nature being what it is, you often fill that in with an assumption that, well, there must be something awry, or there must be something wrong, or so forth, right? You can mm-hmm. fill in the blanks sometimes with the worst possible scenario. I find that when you've got time to sit down with a legislator and answer their questions and kind of demystify things, show them the data, show them the numbers, show them the loans and where the loans went, suddenly it's like, okay, now I've got a better understanding that we should be able to trust you. So often when in communities, large or small, there's a number of things looking is people are looking at housing. Everybody's wanting better housing. Mm. It doesn't mean that there isn't houses in a community, but people are looking for housing. And, you know, the house that someone may have lived in the 1950s might not be the house that someone wants to live in today.
Right.
Number two, we talked about workforce and workforce participation, daycare, and the ability to find daycare in a community, I hear that everywhere I go, is also really important. Because when you have a workforce participation rate as high as South Dakota's is, that means that both spouses, husbands, wives, are working. And so then daycare becomes a question.
Grandparents right. are often working, too.
As yeah. well, yes.
Teenage kids are working.
We're in the workforce.
Yeah,
we're
older we're, brother and sister.
We're
yeah.
a working state. Our state works. You often then hear a lot about infrastructure. You know, how do we get more water into our communities? How do we get more power? If we want to have a small industrial park on the outside of town that's part of a city plan, that's also part of zoning, and has been identified and the people are aware of it, how do we get that infrastructure in place? Because it costs an insane amount now compared to a decade ago for concrete, for paving, for the piping. So often what we do is we'll lean into a community that has a need and has expressed a desire and a vision. We work with them to bring that vision to reality. And often that is, how can we get some support in there to help them build the infrastructure that not only benefits the industrial park, but it also benefits the broader community? Because you've now increased the capacity on many things so that it's available for all the citizens. I'd say the other thing is when you're talking to the businesses, there's not a business out there that doesn't worry about cost and expense, but every business person out there has got dreams about, man, I'd really like to do this, or I'd really like to add onto my building, or I see an opportunity to grow and I want to try to grow my business. How can you help me with that? So those are some of the common things that I hear of the people that I talk to.
How important, you mentioned the broadband infrastructure build out. Give us a quick update on where we're at on that, because people may have forgotten it. And how does that stand to change the game in South Dakota economic development once it's quote-unquote complete, or we've reached some of the big benchmarks at least?
So broadband, think of it as fiber optic. Think of your internet, right? Yeah. Or now it's your streaming services that you would have for entertainment, television, and the like. Back in the 1930s and 1940s, the federal government sponsored and funded and drove rural electrification. They got power out to all the small towns and all the farms and went that last mile. It really changed the lives of people for the better, the ability to have electricity. And the federal government approached broadband and infrastructure for the internet the same way, that it was unfair that only large urban areas would have high-speed internet. And, you know, again, if you're in Falkton, South Dakota, or Eagle Butte, you're not going to get it because it's too far and it's going to be too expensive. So Uncle Sam brought the BEAD program forward, which is the broadband funding, and South Dakota availed itself of that. Our office administers the funding, and the qualified installers are the ones plowing the fiber in and putting it out into the homes, the farms, the ranches, and the businesses. We've got, I think, just under about 10,000 locations left in South Dakota, primarily the Black Hills and far western South Dakota, where you've got vast distances between the ranches. In the Black Hills, it's rock, and it's steep, and the terrain is rough. And to try to put broadband in or do boring, the cost per mile are just crazy. And so what we've started doing now, and this just really happened in the past year, is the availability of low Earth orbit satellites. So think of like Amazon Kuiper internet connectivity or Starlink, where rather than try to go through miles of rock up a steep road somewhere in a ditch in the Black Hills, you're able to get someone set up with essentially the satellite receiver so they can get high-speed internet at a very reasonable cost. So that's kind of where we're at now.
What are you most excited about that you think you can tie to the work that's happening in the state right now?
The Governor Roden's vision that we have got a lot of key things in South Dakota that the nation needs. We grow food. We process food. We're a financial center now. Most people don't think of South Dakota as being finance. We are a financial center. Healthcare in South Dakota with the major hospital systems is at a level far and above that makes many other rural states would be very envious of. We've got that. We've got power generation in a transmission system that was built off the main stem dams and the coal plants that, you know, our fathers and forefathers built in that World War II era. We've got a lot of the components you need to run a high-functioning, I would say, society. And so the governor's thought is, how do we leverage all of that and also think about how are we going to be resilient in the face of weather or, frankly, foreign adversaries so that South Dakota can continue to function when we get hit with a punch? It could be Mother Nature or it could be a foreign adversary. When I talked to General Mark Morrell, the adjutant general for the state of South Dakota that oversees our National Guard units, mm-hmm. he's really clear. It's not if we catch a punch, it's when we're going to get punched. And we're in a different global geopolitical environment. We haven't seen this sort of, I'd say, level of competition since the Cold War. And bluntly, Lori, we need to have a much more serious conversation of where we are at as a nation and as a state on dealing with some of these trade-offs that are coming our way. We've been blessed after the fall of the Soviet Union and the peace dividend. We've been really blessed in the free world and in the U.S. We're a great nation. Frankly, I'm thinking we've got a little soft and a little lazy. And we're going to be asked to make some trade-offs and sacrifices as a nation in the next few years and coming decade in order to prepare for what's coming at us. Yeah. And I think if we do that well, that gives me comfort that when you and I are not in the picture anymore, that the people that we care about are still going to have something that they can rely on.
Give me an example of how you prepare for that. It sounds ominous.
It is ominous.
So, well, what are we talking about?
The old adage, right? How do you eat the elephant one bite at a time?
Right.
So the GRIT Task Force, it's the Governor's Resilient Infrastructure Task Force that was stood up here last summer, is methodically assessing all of our infrastructure to make sure that do we have water, do we have power, do we have wastewater, we're able to keep our roads open and operating, do we have fuel, be it natural gas, gasoline, diesel fuel, to run our farms and our cars. And when you look at that infrastructure network, how resilient is it for a cyber attack or they call it kinetic attacks, right? It's like somebody shooting it or a drone with an explosive. What are we doing to make sure our infrastructure is hardened? Because if something goes down, we know how we behave during COVID. We all rushed to the grocery store and we stocked up on toilet paper, canned goods, whatever, Lysol wipes. And we all went back home, but our power was on, our toilets flushed, the water was there, the internet worked, all the stuff in the state worked while we kind of dealt with a shock to the system. Fast forward, Lori, this was a test for us as a nation. Now imagine having that same thing happen, but all of a sudden your water isn't working or your toilet, the wastewater treatment plant is shut down. Or you don't have electricity, and it's winter. Those are the sort of things that now we're rushing to the store to get. We're going to fill up the car with gas. We're going to get some groceries, but I'm going to come home, and I don't have any electricity. That's a whole different order of magnitude of the sort of things that we're dealing with in these both state and non-state actors and the ability to do non-kinetic cyber attacks into the United States, into our infrastructure. That's the sort of serious things that we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. And so the GRIT Task Force is designed to figure out how do we get through the first week and be able to bounce back.
Yeah. And that looks different in Sioux Falls than it does in Pine Ridge.
Yes. All so right. It's serious stuff designed for serious people for serious conversations. And I think a large part is not to just – I'm not here to scare people. But we're really, I think we as a state and as a nation need a bit of a wake-up call that we've had it pretty good in all of my adult life. We've never had a peer adversary globally. And the wealth that we've created, even though we often overlook it, is staggering both globally and in the United States. Our standard of living is way above when I was a kid in junior high in 1980. And I think we kind of tend to look past all of that. I'm not saying that people need to suffer, but I would frame it like this. This is the 250th anniversary of the United States this year. We are incredibly proud of our freedom and our rights, property rights, rule of law. Second Amendment's a big deal in South Dakota, right? We really, really cherish our rights, and we're proud of them, and we hold them dearly. Well, the other side of that coin is another word that starts with R, and that's responsibility. And when you start talking about the responsibility side of this equation, that's when people can sometimes get a little hinky. And, well, I don't want to look at a power line, or I don't want this in my neighborhood. Well, okay, that's where we have zoning and so forth. I'm not being, you know, dismissive of appropriate planning. What I am saying is that we really need to get serious about the fact that we're going to have to build some things in this country and in this state, and we're going to have to build in preparation for a global environment that, frankly, would have been familiar to my grandfather in 1926. Yeah. But we are not familiar with it today. And we have got time right now, Lori, to think about that and get some things put into place. I don't want somebody writing a book, you know, While England Slept. I don't want somebody writing the book, Why South Dakota Slept. Yeah. That's what we're talking about here. When you look at a cyber attack from an enemy of the United States, suddenly it isn't just a county that's maybe dealing with an ice storm and the power's out. Now you're dealing with the state and or the nation. And at the same time, the National Guard's getting called up. And so the very key people you have in your communities that understand incident command, understand that discipline under pressure, they're being pulled out of the community at the very time everything else is starting to struggle. And so these things compound pretty rapidly. And I think that's what General Morrell is really focused on is I can't control the global political environment, but what we can do is control at least what we're responsible for. There's that R word. We're responsible for our state and our citizens and our neighbors. Let's embrace our rights, but also step up to the plate on the responsibilities we have to kind of build some things and to, I would say, be prepared for any eventuality, weather or otherwise.
Yeah. Commissioner Bill Even, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Always a pleasure, Lori. Thank you.
That's Commissioner Bill Even. He leads Governor Roden's Office of Economic Development. Legislative proposals to provide tax exemptions for data center goods and services have failed to gain support during this legislative session so far. For updates on individual bills, go to sdpb.org/news. That's our conversation for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.